This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Frank Joseph, the reason I mention seriously the concept of the Q continuum in Star Trek Next Generation, it's that creatures, they could be humanoid, have advanced so much they have full control over matter and can create anything they want. And that's another point I wanted to mention too. If we assume we have a race of being, one or more races of beings, thousands of years ahead of us, would we even recognize the products of their technology, or would what we see have to be altered by our perception of it, limitations of human senses, or something they do deliberately? What's your thought?
You know, that's an excellent point. That's actually kind of original. I don't know that I've come across it before. Would we even recognize it? No, I don't think we would. I mean, show an electric light bulb to a Babylonian. What would they think of it? You know, I mean, it would be nothing. They wouldn't be able to figure it out. The Babylonians were terrific astronomers and builders of temples and things like that, but to try to show them and explain an electric light bulb to them, incomprehensible. I think they're absolutely correct. We would not even recognize their technology. And that's why all these attempts to shoot down these things and to back engineer them really don't amount to much, because we don't even know what we're looking at. You know, some of these wrecks, by the way, and I was able to find out, you know, everyone has heard, of course, about the Roswell incident. Well, there were incidents before Roswell in the United States. And one of the most interesting ones was the one in Missouri, outside of Cape Girardeau, Missouri, in March 1941, where one crashed. I don't believe it was shot down or anything, but a UFO craft did crash outside of Cape Girardeau in Missouri in March 1941. It's extremely well documented. I think the documentation of it is impeccable, if not that exactly, but pretty close to it anyway. And then there was another one that was deliberately shot down off the coast of California just about 7 or 8 months later. That was in the early days of World War II. That was confirmed by the President of the United States in a memo which has been reproduced from Franklin Delano Roosevelt's White House desk, in which he talks about these craft that, and right from the beginning, he understood. He was politically very adept. Understood. He says, we need these things so we can win the war effort. We don't know what these things are, where they came from. But I authorized these things to be knocked down as quickly as possible and brought back for they didn't use back engineering or re-engineering or something like that. It's amazing. Even high-ranking admirals, we have some of their correspondence, which I reproduce in the book. It's kind of shocking. And all this stuff was totally covered up so successfully. Most people don't know about it today. When I was able to find out, was not even in 1941. Was in 1936 in Italy. How about that? Yeah.
Tell us. What happened there?
About 15 years ago, there was some terrific disclosure that came out in Italy that got virtually no play outside of that country. A number of documents, literally two suitcases full of documents from the fascist era, the what's called the imperial fascist era, when they started going into Ethiopia and places like that, was disclosed. And a number of these documents came out that outside of Milan, north of Milan, this is in northern Italy, in 1936, what do you call it, a flying saucer crashed. It was not particularly huge. And it was investigated by local people, first of all. They went inside it. There was the only thing to see were chairs, seats, that's all. There was nobody inside. It was vacant, but it was this craft. I'll make this real fast. It's a long, interesting story, but what happened was this. Okay, so local people found it. They reported it to the police that this thing had crashed. It made no noise. It just fell out of the sky. And it wasn't even particularly huge. I think it was like about 60 or 70 feet across, we're not sure exactly, but it was made of extremely light materials, extremely light but very durable. The police contacted the military because they said, oh, my God, this is some kind of a plane that crashed. It was seized by the military. Mussolini himself was notified. Mussolini had the townspeople all arrested, and it rather gently, not really arrested as much as quarantined, because he was convinced that this was a British piece of technology to take care of the Italian Air Force. And he said, oh, my God, I have just spent billions of lira fixing up our Air Force, and now this thing comes along and all our aircraft are obsolete. No one thought that this was from outer space. They all thought, all the Italians thought it was got to be British technology, even though this is before World War II. Got to be British. So what Mussolini did is he rounded up his top scientists, among them Marconi, inventor of the radio. And Marconi led these physicists and aviation pioneers like Bandini and all these people, and they looked this thing up, and they filed a report with Mussolini in which they said, this is not British. We don't know what this is. We have no idea. This did not come from Britain. The British don't have anything like this. Nobody has anything like this. It looks as though it is some kind of a flying vehicle. We have no idea how it can fly. It's made of a material, some kind of extremely lightweight material, which we should try to reproduce for our aircraft, but we have no idea what this stuff is made of. Okay, that's 1936. Flash to the next year, 1937. Adolf Hitler comes to visit Mussolini at the big to-do, worldwide attention. In conference, Mussolini says, hey, look, this thing crashed. We can't figure it out. We don't know what it is. We'll give it to you, and maybe you can figure it out what it is. So I said, yeah, sure, we'll check it out. But the Italians, they changed their mind later on. They actually overrode Mussolini. They said, you can't let this thing out of the country. It's ours. It's got metal on it some kind. We're going to build indestructible planes with it. The Germans can come and try to figure it out, but they can't take it. So Mussolini says, okay. So then he goes back to Hitler and says, well, we can't give it to you, but if you want to send your people down, they'll look at it. Hitler says, yeah, sure, fine. So he sends the scientists down there. And the Germans, in a typical fashion, they go down and they look at it, and they say, oh, yeah, yeah, this is some secret thing. It is British. It's got to be British. And what we'll do is we'll get this thing to fly. We'll make this thing work because we're just building jet engines. So we'll put some jet engines on it that will fly. We'll do a recreation of this thing. So the Germans work like crazy all during World War II, trying to make this thing go, and they do a reproduction of it, and it doesn't work. The jet engines don't work at all. Then after World War II, the engineers like Habermal and the other ones, guys with Belzano, these two guys that were working on this for, and with their colleagues, their engineers for a long time, some of them went to the Soviet Union, and the Soviets used them to do other things. And then this other guy, Belzano, went to Canada, and he built the Avril flying saucer car based on what they saw in Milan. And it didn't work right either because they could never figure out the propulsion for this thing. The craft itself was seized by the Americans right at the end of World War II and disappeared. Have no idea where it was, but they know that it was in this hangar not too far from the Swiss border. So there's another example of the military story, which is a little bizarre. But the documents for it, I was really surprised. And believe me, I wouldn't be talking about this crazy story unless I'd seen the documents in Italian. And these documents that describe everything that I've told you, they have the seal of the Fascist Party on it. They have police stamps on it. It's all time-stamped. These are legitimate documents. Nobody has ever made a dime off of this if it's a hoax. No one has ever come out that, I picked this up. And those documents have been out now. Oh, gosh, it's going on 15 years. So they are definitely authentic. This actually happened. This flying saucer crashed in Italy. The Italians and the Germans tried to back engineer it, and I guess we did too, but without success.
Well, that's just – we're going to break in a moment, Randall, so let's pick up that question in our next segment. This, ladies and gentlemen, takes us back to something we discussed on the Paracast in the early years about how the military reacts with the presence, possible presence of UFOs. Of course, the book from Frank Joseph is Military Encounters with Extraterrestrials, The Real War of the Worlds. It can almost be frightening to contemplate that. Frank, Gene, and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Blockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. BlockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at BlockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. BlockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
Bags under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now, there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women.
I've probably noticed in the past 5 years that my eyes have gained a lot of fine lines, wrinkles, my crow's feet have gotten deeper. Wow, I was hoping for 5 years, but that's like what my eyes looked like 10 years ago.
That is really cool. Wrinkle gone?
It's easy. You just put it on your finger and go. I wish I had more down here because I can still see one wrinkle. It's bugging me.
I am a little bit emotional. Turning 40, I didn't think would be a big deal to me, but that looks like the me that I feel like inside instead of what I see when I look in the mirror.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live-underground gopher. You need Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional, off-the-grid mobile survival bug-out house that's well-equipped and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement? You bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Randall is up and ready to act with a question for our guest, Frank Joseph. Randall?
Well, yeah, I was just going to comment there because I really find your level of research and connecting the dots to be quite fantastic. You know, we've all heard of the Nazi UFO projects and you know, for the most part, it seems to be a lot of mythology.
Yeah.
But if what you're saying is true, this represents the roots of that whole series of stories that come together and culminate in the whole Nazi UFO, Nazi Bell UFO, Nazis on the moon conspiracy thing.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. Everything that I was able to find out about the German UFO project, and there's so much stuff on it, indicates that it was a total failure. However, the Germans were very serious about building this thing, so serious to the point that they had Rudolf Hess as their sort of their guiding spirit. He thought it was fantastic, and that it would be very important for the German Luftwaffe to have something like this. When Rudolf Hess was imprisoned for life after World War II, this is something most people don't realize, he was in contact with NASA. He was in correspondence with NASA. He had drawings. He apparently had some kind of an engineering degree because he had engineering drawings of spacecraft, these circular spacecraft that he sent to NASA. Now, you would think NASA, like, oh, this is this crazy old Nazi up in Spandau. But no, they corresponded with him. They accepted his correspondence. He was allowed to correspond with them because it wasn't anything political, I guess. And he either invented or somehow devised a kind of a training device that would assist astronauts in the weightless conditions of space. And it was a kind of like a, oh, I don't know how to describe it, like a merry-go-round, a small merry-go-round in which the pilot would be strapped to it, and it would slowly be, the speed would be slowly increased to help him to adjust to these different pressures and so forth. But anyway, NASA said that they already had something like that. It was a centrifugal force machine.
Of course, yeah, we've seen those quite a few of the clips for the astronaut training programs.
This is in the late 1940s, 1950s, when after Rudolf Hess died, it was found that he had a virtual library of sometimes pretty complex aerospace books. He had maps. He was obviously obsessed with the space thing. You would think, well, this guy, you know, all you think about was the good old days or whatever, you know, but that's not the case. I thought that was extremely interesting. And that story, you know, I track these things down, let me tell you. I don't want to just deal with speculation and what other people think. That story comes from a Colonel Byrd. And Colonel Byrd was Rudolf Hess' personal warden in the 1970s, early mid-1970s. He was eventually fired because he liked Hess so much that they thought it was compromising his situation. But Byrd, in his book, which you can still get, I forgot the name of it, although I cited it in my own book, Byrd mentions how Hess, he was convinced that there were intelligent beings outside the Earth, and that it was important for us to establish some kind of a positive relationship with them, and that we had a lot to learn. Our space program could learn from that. Hess, of course, he was a very secretive man, too, and it's, the whole mystery of his life is still rather perplexing. Hess was in charge of the Nazi UFO program, which never really developed into the kind of fantastic things, you know, they're down at the South Pole fighting Americans. None of that stuff ever happened at all. But
hang on a sec here, Frank, because I was listening to you on another show. Now, are we talking about the same Byrd that did this interview with the El Materiel about Operation High Jump?
No, that's something completely
different. Because this Byrd name keeps coming up in all.
No, that is Richard E. Byrd.
Ah, okay.
B-Y-R-D. Alan Byrd.
Interesting. Because, you know, we've got the Germans, we've got Antarctica, we've got UFOs, and then we've got Operation High Jump, and then we have this Byrd, right? So we've got different Byrds, so thanks for clearing that up.
We should come back and
talk about that, too. I'd really like you to, if we can, in a bit. But for now, okay, just go ahead and carry on where you were going with that. Then.
Well, I was just saying that, and you brought it up, and you were correct to do this, that we've heard so much silly stuff about how the Germans had flying saucer fleets and all that, and they went to the moon and all that crazy stuff. But no, what happened was that the only reason that the Germans were involved in any UFO research was because of the Italian crash, 1936, that Mussolini's scientists could not figure out. In fact, the Italian scientists were led by a man by the name of Balzano. They cooperated with the German scientists, who were led by Habermas and Meyer. I checked these fellows out, and yes, they were aero engineers. They really existed, and some died in the Soviet Union, and others came to the United States and Canada. Like I said, one worked for Avro, which was a big aerospace company in the 40s and 50s. So they got this craft, and they did realize eventually that it was extraterrestrial. They were shocked. They said, no, the British, nobody could make this. This metal is not from here. I think that was it. Yeah, they had some metallurgists. They're saying some of these elements are not earthly that are in this metal. Both the Italians and the Germans were more interested in the metal than anything else, because they figured, God, if we could put this on our planes, we'd get some pretty first-rate stuff. But they couldn't do it.
You know, this all explains very much why we were hell-bent on getting technology from the Germans after World War II. Now, as a corollary, you're probably familiar with the book The Day After Roswell.
Yes.
From Philip Corso, and very much rewritten by William Burns, where Corso claims to have been the bagman, more or less, to take the technology recovered from the Roswell crash to private industry. Now, this has been heavily disputed, but the question is here, what in the way of inventions could we retrieve from an advanced spacecraft, and would we only be able, because of the technology being so advanced, to maybe nip at the edges, but not much more?
Yeah, well, that's kind of speculation, I guess. I don't know. The Roswell crash, that was not an accident. There were two vehicles involved, and they were both deliberately destroyed by the Secretary of War, Forrestal. It's, you know, it's a funny thing.
Yeah, Forrestal went out a window, didn't he? I mean, there's a whole other connection, too.
He was thrown out the window. He was thrown out the window.
I mean, that was that's a real just the dots that you put together here, all these little bits and pieces, they're just so interesting to see how they connect.
They do connect, and as I was saying, I was going to try to connect a little dot there, or several dots, and that is, when I was putting this together, this whole story, I saw how one incident sequenced into the next. They're all, like, woven together. It's not like one thing is totally separate. Oh, this happened there, this happened there. No, they all inflect on each other. One thing happens because of another.
Frank, got a break. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
You know, the clock on the wall is connecting the dots, saying break. It's break time with Frank, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Trump says he's postponing a nationwide immigration sweep to deport some undocumented people living in the U.S., including families. He's now said he wants to give lawmakers 2 weeks to work out some border solutions. Brent Wilkes is Senior Vice President for the Hispanics Foundation.
I mean, it's no accident that he announced his re-election campaign this week, and this is also the same time that he announces some type of massive crackdown on immigrants that will deport millions of people. Sounds a lot to me like campaign rhetoric and not really much of a serious strategy from Homeland Security.
The president's decision came after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi had phoned him asking him to call off the operation. Administration officials also tell the Associated Press Immigration and Customs Enforcement was concerned that some details that were leaked to the media could jeopardize its agents. This is USA Radio News.
Money! 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 Money. You gotta have it. When you need it, what do? If you don't have a rich uncle, call LendingTree. With us, hundreds of banks compete for your business, so you'll get loans with competitive interest rates, and in some cases, with no closing costs. So here's the deal. If you need money, call us. Do you want to refinance your current loan? Are you 62 or older and interested in a reverse mortgage? Then call LendingTree now. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. We've closed over $250 billion in loans. We know what we're doing and can help you. Call right now for a free quote. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. That's 800-634-1315. NMLS number 1136.
If you owe money to the IRS, you need to hear this. The IRS is cracking down on those who owe back taxes. It starts with a devastating letter, and if you don't act immediately, you could find yourself having your wages garnished or have a lien placed on your property. But there's a solution. Tax 10,000 can help. Avoid enforced compliance, where these holds on your income and seizure of your home could become a nightmare that just won't end. Call 800-239-9957 now and speak to one of our experts. 800-239-9957 is the number to link you directly to a tax resolution specialist who will negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Working through the IRS Fresh Start program, all the forms will be handled for you. All you have to do is make the toll-free call. 800-239-9957. Find out if you qualify and possibly save yourself thousands of dollars, not to mention a lot of headaches. It could be the best call you've made today. That number again, 800-239-9957. The service does not provide tax settlement or legal services. We will refer you to a company that does provide such services. Often the IRS will not agree to any reduction in the amount owed. Not all taxpayers who owe more than $10,000 will qualify for a tax reduction program.
This is Robert Hastings, author of UFOs and Nukes, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Some listeners have said I do the worst segues on the planet. I resemble that remark.
Famous for something.
Let's go ahead, Frank. You are really pursuing a fascinating line of thought here.
Well, we talked about Roswell. Roswell was payback because of something called Operation High Jump. Operation High Jump is where the United States was bested in a contest, a real firefight. Men were killed and planes shot down and ships were sunk in the Antarctica, battle into Antarctica, and we got trounced. And as a payback for that, Admiral Forrester, he became then the Secretary of War, he was going to get the UFO knots, or whatever you want to call them, that had humiliated his Navy in Antarctica. This is all a real World War II mindset. You know, we're the toughest, we're the best, and if somebody beats us, boy, we're going to really get them now. You know, that's the way the military really thought in World War II, and that's just exactly what has happened with Forrestal. And so he said he was a brilliant, brilliant man, and he knew how to work with engineers and learn from them and ask the right questions and make the right deductions. And this is all World War II stuff, because you had to do this stuff fast and clear, otherwise you're going to lose the war. And that's how he regarded the UFOs, as really no different than the Nazis or the Japs as far as he was concerned. And he set a trap in New Mexico, because New Mexico, that's where we were testing. We had a lot of atomic testing materials there, and the UFO Folks were really interested in that, and there was a lot of buzzing going on. UFOs were almost common in the 1940s, right after World War II, in New Mexico. That's where the huge concentration of sightings was seen, you almost can say on a regular basis. And so what old Forrestal did is he set up what in effect was a microwave oven that had a very short range, a blast range of maybe only a couple hundred feet. That's about all. And he lured these two UFOs. He actually lured them into this area. I describe it in the book in greater detail, and I have time to discuss here. And he fried them with a microwave oven, and he knocked them down. That was a part of the payback for our defeat at the Weddell Ice Shelf in Antarctica in 1947. And that story about Operation High Jump, that only was possible because of the German Antarctic expedition that Admiral Byrd was to become a part of in 1939 before World War II. This is all secret stuff hardly anybody knows. Imagine that. On the verge of World War II, the same year that World War II started, Admiral Richard E. Byrd is in Berlin, Germany, and he's invited as a special guest of the German Antarctic Society, which is about to go down to Antarctica and meet up with some pretty interesting folks down there. And Byrd says, I can't go. I'd love to go, but our countries, our relationships are terrible, and we can't do it. So the Germans go down by themselves. They make some shocking discoveries, which they can't talk about. World War II ends, 1945. The guy that's in charge of the German Antarctic expedition saw this stuff, photographed this stuff. He gets clearance. This is Germany, an occupied country, former enemy. He gets clearance to go all the way to Washington, D.C. His name was Richter, Admiral Richter of the Kriegsmarine, German Navy. And he goes and he meets up with Admiral Forrestal. Oh, I'm glad you're back. Glad you survived the war. Blah, blah, blah. He says, yeah, look at these photographs we got. I couldn't talk to you because we've been at war for the past 6 or 7 years. But check this stuff out. So Byrd sees this stuff. And then he goes to his buddy. That's all the good boy network. Things have not changed. He goes to his buddy, Admiral Forrestal. And he says, fine, you better not mothball the fleet. I want a task force right now. I want to go down there and check these guys out. I want to more than check them out. I want to take them out because they don't look like they're anything that we know. They might be Nazis, too. We don't know. I don't think they're Nazis because one of the Nazis just came here and told me all this stuff. I don't know what to think about it. So then Forrestal says, okay, you got it. Now imagine this. This is 1946, right? 1946, the whole world is wrecked except for the United States. We are the supreme power. The Soviet Union has lost over 40 million dead. Their military, which is just a big show now, is a complete shambles. Germany gone, Italy, Japan, all that. Everybody is destroyed. And the United States is doing everything it can to dismantle its military. There's no need for it anymore. Nobody wants all this stuff, a lot of stuff. And what happens is Admiral Byrd and Forrestal put together this immense task force. It's huge. It involves an aircraft carrier with over 200 warplanes armed to the teeth, destroyers, the latest communications vessels, two submarines, flying boats. This is a task force, like a major invasion, and that's what it is. And they invade the South Pole. How crazy is that? Why would they do that? So by 1947, early 1947, it's in public view. They're about to leave, you know, the East Coast, and they hold a big press conference. And Admiral Byrd, being the kind of guy that he is a very honest man, you know, the press is asking him, you know, oh, this is a terrific task force. Looks like you're ready to really take on somebody. You know, what's this all about? Before he can say anything, a Navy press spokesman comes in and says, well, this is just a scientific expedition. We're going down there to, you know, see what we can learn about science down there in the Antarctic. And then Admiral Byrd speaks up and he says, it's a military operation. I can't talk about it. So then the press guy just sort of scoots Admiral Byrd away and says, no, you can't say stuff like that. And that's actually in the AP press coverage. Well, the U.S. Navy is going down to the Antarctic to see what the penguins and the temperatures are like down there. But Admiral Byrd said that it has military significance as well. So they go down there and they say, well, we're going to be in the Antarctic for about 8 or 9 months. It takes to get down there, to work down there and to do all of our studies, atmospheric pressures and so on. And, we're going to have maneuvers and things like that. Like, who's going to be bothering us at the South Pole?
Yeah, that's the official story. Anyways.
That's the official story. So then they go down there and, they return in less than 3 months. And when they return, the task force is in such bad shape, it cannot make it back to the United States. It has to stop off at Valparaiso, Chile. And when it stops at Valparaiso, Chile, and huge crowds of Chilean people come out to see this, to welcome the Americans, there are a number of men that are taken off the ship that are not in very good shape. They're on gurneys, and some of them don't look totally alive, and it's not a few. The ships themselves look battered. The ships stay there for several weeks for temporary repairs. Admiral Byrd is given who is in charge, who is there at that time, who is personally in charge of the entire task force. He is interviewed by El Mercurio. El Mercurio was and still is the largest Spanish-speaking newspaper in the world. It published in Santiago, but read everywhere. And in this interview, he is more outspoken than he should have been. They ask him, what happened? And he doesn't answer directly, except to say that the world is in a very perilous situation right now. Now, that's bizarre, because 1947, the world was in a very peaceful situation because most people were dead, or not most people, but many people were dead. And he talks about craft that are able to fly from pole to pole at extremely high speed, hostile craft. I don't mean to alarm anyone, he said, but we have to be aware that there are craft that are able to fly from pole to pole in a very short time, and that these are beyond anything that we can control at the time.
We got a break here. We can't control these announcements. Frank, Gene, and Randall, you're in.
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on this special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Fellow Patriots, my name is Todd Savage, founder of BlackRifleRealEstate.com. Like you, I was a prisoner of the alt-left sanctuary state until one day I chose to lead my family to freedom. Today we live on a sustainable 20-acre homestead where we shoot, hunt, garden, and homeschool our children without the tyranny of the nanny state looking over us. If you're ready to flee the city to the freedom of Idaho or Montana, our Black Rifle Real Estate team is here to help. Go to BlackRifleRealEstate.com. That's BlackRifleRealEstate.com.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203.
Anyone can fall victim to moving fraud.
Know your rights and responsibilities.
There was never really a valid contract.
Movers must always give written estimates.
I was bound to an estimate, but it was after the fact.
Be sure that any document is complete before signing it, and that it includes information to determine the final charges.
It was a version that I had not seen before.
Visit protectyourmove.gov to download a free moving fraud prevention guide. Search for registered movers and view their complaint histories. Move with confidence.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Frank Joseph, I wanted to throw out something here, and that is we talk about shooting down UFOs. Maybe that was what happened in Roswell. The thing I wonder about, though, is we have one or more races of beings thousands of years ahead of us, assuming any of them have been around for 2,000 or 3,000 years. I wonder how we could possibly even damage their craft with our weaponry.
We have not only damaged their craft with our weapon, we have shot them down. We have killed them. We have killed them. In cold blood. Yes, I think the analogy is this. Remember the movie called Apocalypse Now? And there's a scene in there where there's an American patrol boat, and it's way in the jungles of Vietnam. And this patrol boat has radar and radio and machine guns and all kinds of modern equipment, and it's attacked by some native people. And the captain on board the patrol boat gets hit with a spear right through his chest. And when he falls on the deck and he's dying, the expression on his face is amazed. His last words are, "A spear," and then he dies. In other words, here you have this high technology compared to these native peoples that are on the banks throwing rocks and spears at them, and yet a determined throw took this guy out. I know that we've done the same thing. That's what the book is about, documentation. They have taken us out, and we've taken them out, too, believe me.
They have taken us out. Now, specific cases, we have heard, of course, about the Mantell incident, but more recent research, even Kevin Randall, who's been chasing footnotes for years, points out that probably this involved, maybe he saw a balloon or something, that it didn't involve any advanced aircraft. But we set aside the Mantell incident. I know that back in the early days, Major Kehoe, believe me, the crashes, how many are documented where we were taken out by them?
Let me give you an example. On December 23rd, 1953, there was an unusual radar contact over northern Michigan, actually over Lake Superior by Sault Ste. Marie. This radio contact, this blip that showed up, was pretty large. They had no idea, the radio operators had no idea what it was, where it came from. The procedure was that it should be investigated. So, an F-89 jet interceptor called a Scorpion was manned by Lieutenant Felix Mokla Jr., and his radar operator was Robert R. Wilson. They were vectored to this contact, this unknown contact. Nobody called it a UFO, and they were not going there to attack it. Maybe it was an airliner or something, but it was in military space. It was in secure space. And a military an airliner that would go through that area had to have clearance because this was a testing area. Still is, as a matter of fact. And the blip is on the two blips appear on the ground radar of Lieutenant Mokla's F-89 and this other strange larger blip, which is traveling at only about 500 miles an hour. So the F-89 could catch up to it. Although the blip they thought was unusually large, not huge, but just unusually large. So maybe it's a bomber or something like that. We don't know. Enemy. So check it out. Shortly before noon on December 23rd, 1953, Robert R. Wilson, the radio operator aboard the F-89, reports that the craft does not resemble any identifiable aircraft that they've ever seen. Have no idea. It's particularly large. When ground control asked Wilson to describe it, communications broke down, and there was no more communication with the F-89. The two blips on the screen merged, and then to one, and then both blips disappeared. The F-89 was gone, completely vanished. A three-week rescue operation was conducted by Canadian and American authorities. Not a scrap of wreckage was ever found. Although this incident took place around noon in clear conditions, relatively clear conditions, no one on the ground witnessed anything unusual. No wreckage, nothing. And from that time to now, there's not been a trace of Felix Mokla, Robert R. Wilson, or the F-89. It is as though, precisely as though, this aircraft and these two men merged with this unknown blip and vanished altogether. Never been seen. This is not a story. This is so documented that Mokla's family set up a plaque after the U.S. Air Force said, oh, well, they must have run into trouble of some kind. And this plaque says how Felix Mokla and Robert R. Wilson were abducted by some craft from another world.
Corollary to that, Frank, because we only have a few segments left and there's so much ground to cover. Are you familiar with the work of Dr. David Jacobs?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And our listeners know it's pretty controversial. He says that a lot of people are being abducted by aliens with the intent of creating a hybrid race, part human, part alien, that will quietly infiltrate our population and possibly our government. And one day we may wake up and E.T. is in control, but not a shot fired. Now, like I said, we have disputes with Dr. Jacobs over his technique, the way he hypnotizes witnesses, etc. But I would think here, if I was an advanced race and I want to take over humans, either for their own benefit or ours, it would be a lot better to do it without having to kill anybody. Just do it by infiltrating the proper channels.
Well, it works. Sounds like that would work. Absolutely. There have been very serious attempts at this hybridization for thousands of years. There's something known as the Paracas mummies you may or may not be familiar with. I had an interview about that just a few days ago, the Jeff Rentz show. The Paracas mummies are not human. They go back 2,000 and more years ago. I was in Paracas myself. I know what I'm talking about. And the Paracas mummy collection indicates that there was a hybridization attempt by extraterrestrials to seriously grow a hybrid human alien race. This has actually been known since the early 19th century when a Dr. Robert Miller, who was the chief anthropologist of Berlin University in 1839, was able to show that a number of native women in Paracas were carrying the fetus of these half-human creatures who had these elongated heads. It looked precisely like the classic idea of the alien with the long head and the big eye. So this hybridization process maybe failed back then, but maybe they're giving another shot now. I don't know, but it would work. I would think that's going to just sort of slowly take over, and that's one way to keep us from threatening their own civilization outside of our planet.
Now, I'm going to ask you this, and we'll have to get most of the answer in our next segment. What about the other theory that E.T. came here thousands of years ago, found this race of primitive humans, and then seeded us or adapted these beings to be in their image, which, of course, refers to a lot of the ancient religious texts. And I'm not trying to be against organized religion here. We're talking about a lot of fascinating possibilities, because I know religion and politics create all sorts of disputes here. But we're thinking here of Earth people being the result of genetic experiments, and they watch over us. And the reason they haven't interfered too much overtly is that whatever's going on, they were responsible, and they're looking at the consequences of their action over the centuries, and maybe they will have to intervene, as I said, but we'll find out. Frank Joseph, by the way, is going to be at the Alien XPO or Alien Expo at Knoxville Convention Center August 17th and 18th. He'll be talking there, and I'll ask him before we close the show more about the event, what he plans for it. And I have to think, I haven't been to Tennessee since I went to Nashville with my wife back in the 1980s. You never know. Frank Joseph, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, and multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X-large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Have you heard the warning from the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Young, Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.